Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I am Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
And this week, we are here to talk about the Humane AI pin now that all the reviews are up. But a really quick shout out that for those of you who have been listening and missing the live stream version of this podcast recording, we are back today. You can always go back to the Engadget YouTube channel to watch a replay if you wish. Hopefully we'll be able to continue doing this every week at about 10:30 a.m. Eastern. So just keep an eye out. On Thursday mornings. Yes, and so we are soft relaunching the live stream. Yay! Thanks a lot to Devendra for all that hard work in the background. But anyway.
All the fun stuff, yeah.
Yes. This episode, we have a lot of special guests joining us for this momentous occasion, and I will bring them on and introduce them in a little bit. So as always, if you're enjoying the show, please make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, leave us a review on iTunes, and yeah, send us your emails, podcast@engadget.com. So today, Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern, our reviews went up on Engadget.com. My 5,150-word review is up, and we have a 10-ish minute long review video as well. Elsewhere on the internet, we saw reviews go up on Mr. Mobile's YouTube channel, Wired, and a lot of other publications. And speaking of, we've got two guests joining us today, Julian Chikatsu over at Wired. Hello, Julian.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And drumroll, please, for the very flippy boy, but this time snappy boy.
Flippy boy?
YouTuber extraordinaire, wearable tester of all time. I don't even, whatever. Mr. Mobile himself, Michael Fisher. Hey, Fisher, what's up?
I think it will be very easy to live up to that intro, Sherlyn. Thank you very much.
I'm just very measured.
Happy to be here.
Very measured.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So all our reviews are up. We spent some time talking together behind the scenes before the embargo lifted. So we have a lot of thoughts. I know we're three of us, and Ben and Dev are both very excited to hear our thoughts. But before we get into that, we'll talk a little bit about what the Humane AI pin is. And I also want to just say that we're going to have to try to like rein this conversation in a bit. I mean, we also already acknowledge that like there's a lot we want to say. I don't know that we'll have necessarily enough time to get through all of it. So I'm going to try to follow a general structure of like certain elements, and then we'll go ham in each of those sections, right? So first of all, let's have Fisher, you start taking a stab at describing this thing for us. What is the Humane AI pin?
Well, I wasn't prepared for this. The Humane AI pin actually is rather easy to describe. It is that if you imagine a phone that you shrank to 15% of its total volume and made a wearable, essentially like a kind of slightly oversized Apple Watch Ultra, and removed the screen and replaced the screen with a digital projector that gives you an interface on your skin, and then put a hard limit on how much time you could use the laser, so it really interact predominantly with your voice, and replace the operating system you know and love with an LLM powered one, and throw in a lot of version 1.0 problems on top of that. What you have is the catnip for a gadget reviewer who doesn't want to review yet another phone, but probably something that not a lot of people should buy.
That was a lot of words, Fisher, and I think I'm going to throw the same question to Julian. Like, what would you describe? Yeah. Some of us need editors. I'm going to throw it over to Julian. Can you describe it in 5 words? Sorry.
5 words?
Because Fisher took all your words. I'm sorry.
You know what's nice, Sherlyn, is that you gave me ample time to prepare answer,
And nice. Julian gets seconds to do 5 words.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pin that can't do five words. Anyway, Pin, yes. it's basically a glorified ChatGPT on your body. And in the same way that ChatGPT and things like Gemini can get stuff really amazingly correct and give you so much cool information, it can also make up stuff and give you completely incorrect information. So that is one of the main takeaways of this thing, is that you can't quite trust it, and it sits on your body, which is a great recipe for a product.
I mean, I've got a few words for this
yes,
thing.
Yes, please. Like,
just from looking at the hype cycle and hearing about you guys testing it, the few words is, it's a hot damn mess. That's what it is. That's all it is.
I can't disagree. Yeah. Normally, I think, Devinder, you and I disagree about a lot of bleeding edge
about
stuff.
Life.
But I cannot say you're wrong. I can't say you're wrong about any of that.
I do want to point out that the company, Humane Inc., its main developer, or its co-founders are Bethany Bongiorno and Imran Chowdhury, who were managers at Apple before, and I believe OpenAI's founder or CEO Sam Altman also has a stake in Humane Inc. And the AI Pin that we all reviewed over the past 10-ish days is likely their first product. It's announced as their first product. So it's like possible that there's other things coming from the company. But this is like the first manifestation of anything we've ever seen from them. Let's talk initial impressions and expectations to begin with. I was mad hype. I was like, whoa, this thing looks so good. In your video, Fisher, you mentioned that the hardware is really good. And I really wanted to point out in my review that the hardware is so clean. It's so well thought out. But there, I mean, I never got enough words to, like, I'm already at 5,000 words. I couldn't, like, spend another paragraph talking about how actually there are some really thoughtful touches. The cradle is weighted. The charging cradle is weighted. There's, like, you know, a lot of seamless.
It's exquisite.
Yeah, the design is really clean.
Yeah.
I know you. I've already heard.
Down to the insulation on the wire.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, the braiding.
They made it feel like a shoelace because of that, like the parallel to wearables. Yeah. And they like changed the radius on the wall charger at the last minute. Like it's just, it's exquisite hardware. I mean, when you unbox it, you really feel like you're getting a deluxe level experience from space, because it does look like it landed from space.
The charging case.
Space is all over
this. It's like the space egg. It's like that Men in Black movie where they had to send the lady back to space. I forget the which one it was. Two, maybe?
Send
Men
the
in
lady
Black?
Back
that was
to
the
space.
First one.
Maybe that was...
Zark?
That may be two.
Oh, that might
two.
Have been
the bad lady.
Yeah.
I have to say, you guys were talking so much about the design, Trillin. You're saying the design stuff is good. The thing that struck me about this is it seems like a movie prop. Like, it seemed like a movie prop that they were selling. The TED Talk where the CEO was, like, showing it off. It felt like a movie demonstration, but the sort of thing where you watch a movie like Demolition Man or something, I'm like, oh, that's, why are there three seashells? I don't know. You stop thinking about it 5 seconds later, right? Whereas this, we have to live with it, and you have to think about it, and nothing about it seems good, unfortunately.
Julian, were you as taken by the hardware, or were you like, your first reaction was something else?
I think for me, it was just like, I thought it looks great. Like it looked great. And especially when I saw the accessories, I thought it was, you know, really well polished and had that Apple like quality to them. But in my briefing, we spent maybe 60 or 70% of the time on the accessories. And I think in their initial launch video, they also spent, like, they launched immediately into the colors and the accessories of the product.
Yeah,
and that
right.
was a bit of a red flag for me, because I don't know what this thing does yet. I'm still waiting to find out what this thing is about to do. And now we're first talking about the accessory system, the colors and everything. And I found that a little weird, because, you know, I think most people would initially want to know, what is this thing going to do for me? And that initially sort of tipped me off that, like, maybe this is not going to be that great. And
did the company answer questions? Like, you guys all talked with them, and I feel like this is a situation where I love to be that annoying, you know, person at the front of the class during a briefing. Like, if I see blood, I'm like, oh, really? What is this? You're promising all this stuff? Like, I tend to like go for it. Were you guys asking?
So I tend to, we're going to get into all the things it does wrong. And I will say that my experience in person with them was really quite refreshing, because we know how Humane kind of hit the scene with this kind of opaque TED Talk and then this really, really vaguely off-putting launch video. And I found Imran and Bethany in that to be, you know, very, very inaccessible and very robotic. And so I was surprised when I met them to be like, oh, right, these are humans. They're also humans who happen to be married, and they're almost, and this is not relevant to anybody but me, perhaps, but I found it almost like cute because they still work very well together and they finish.
You do, they're so cute.
And then I saw the real people behind them. So that was refreshing to me. And they're enthusiastic and they're excited about the product. Then they were willing to answer almost any questions that I put.
Not so, since Theranos, that guys, was very have helpful. We seen a successful power couple in tech, right? And everything worked out well there.
I really like Bethany Bongiorno, by the way. I think she had a very good, like, even in the follow-ups when we were encountering problems and we followed up and we're like, what? Like, this thing runs hot. And we'll get into all of that very quickly. I want us to get into that, like, soon. They were like, oh, we realize and we're sorry that was your experience. Like, this is... they accepted some, they took some accountability in some of the responses, and they did say that they're working to address the issues that we came up with. Like, so I want to like caveat all of this that like as we are about to go ham on this thing, note that there are humans behind this company and they seem to be making an effort. And I think it was a very ambitious thing they took on. So speaking of ambition, for me, I was most excited to try out that projector. This is the most unique thing. I never saw anything like that before the Humane AI Pin. Julian, what was your experience like? Because I think you might have the largest hands on this group. Can you tell me a little bit about why that might be relevant?
Well, so yeah, you got to put your palm up in front of the device after you tap it, and then it projects the display. This is the only display available on it. It projects that onto your palm. And so obviously, the bigger the surface area, the better for you. I did compare it with Trillin's, and Trillin's hand is nowhere near as big as mine. And I was like, how do you actually see anything on that?
Because how does Trillin lift things or pick things up? By the way, putting your only display on your hand, a thing that it's always free and never obstructed by things in daily life. Brilliant.
Sure.
Brilliant
never.
Decision.
Yeah, we never have to use that thing. So go on, Julian.
Never have to use
it. I did notice, and I don't know if this says something about my lack of going to the gym, but your arm starts to get a little tired after you kind of hold it up and you're trying to scroll through texts or something.
Fisher?
Sherlyn definitely built that objection into her video very, very smartly. I can tell you've done reviews for a long time because that's the first thing that a product defender will show up in the comments and say, like, you just need to work out more. It's not too heavy. And Sherlyn's like, yeah, no, I go to the gym all the time. No, look, I think here's the thing. I like that the laser projector seems to hail from the future. It is certainly my favorite thing to use. It was my favorite scene to shoot for my videos, to go in my bathroom after the hot shower had been running for 10 minutes to give us a steam bath so you could see the beams. But, you know, obviously that is not what they're trying to do. And I'll say one last nice thing before we talk about the performance. I think adding a laser projector that has an inherent time limit because of thermals, you know what? If you're going to put it on any product, put it on this one, because their whole mission is to take people off their screens, which is a very kind of 2018. We're getting too digitally intoxicated.
You know what? The laser should just slightly. You're not supposed to. It should just slightly burn you. You know,
like, I don't.
The longer
it does.
You have it open.
Yeah, right.
It should hurt to you. Yes. It should like leave an imprint on your hand. I think that would make this product
better. Let's circle back a little bit, Fisher. When you said that, like, if you're going to, you know, use a projector that has like a limit because of its thermal limitation, can you kind of explain what that is and why that is?
Yeah. So, why is speculation? But I think we're all kind of aligned on why. This is a very small device. It has a lot packed into it. The engineers I talked to at MWC said the hardest part about building it was the miniaturization. I mean, they had to shave corners off components. So the laser, these are not common, to your point, Sherlyn. We don't see them a lot. There's not an industry making mobile-friendly projectors. So it uses a lot of power. It kicks out a lot of heat. The device already makes a lot of heat for all the other reasons a tiny phone would. So after about 6 to 9 minutes of using that laser, you get your AI pin needs to cool down. And then it turns off the projector. And you're very sad because you can't really use anything else on the device. But again, you're supposed to use voice to interact with it predominantly, which is great because it's AI powered. And so that works perfectly too.
Mark Dell in our chat is asking, have any smartwatches ever had projectors? And Rob Langley says, whole different meaning to burn in, which let's get to that, right? Being burned, for me, was something I referred to a lot in my video, and Fisher, you called me out on this a bunch. I think I was just so, I guess, scarred by the couple times that I did get, you know, burn, and the word burn too, I couldn't find a different word for it. I didn't mean that like I had a scar, you know, I left a mark, my skin sizzled.
It's hot.
But it ran hot, and hot enough that like when I accidentally brushed past it, it would be like a shock, a huge shock. But I also am more heat sensitive than most. So I want to say that this wasn't like a third, second, or first degree burn, but that it was definitely like a shocking feeling. But that's it. We all felt this thing run hot, right? Like, Julian, did you have that experience? Because I know Fisher and I did.
His AI pin just started talking because it didn't like what we were saying about it, like, clearly. He's yeah. like, no, thank you.
Julian, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I touched your, like, your humane AI unit, and that was unnaturally hot, and I was like, holy crap, that feels really hot. Mine had, I ran into the same sort of cool, you know, your AIP needs to cool down a couple times, and it also gets really warm. But I also, like, you know, taking aside the general, this thing overheats fairly often if you use it too much, even when it's not in use, the rear battery has this like lukewarmth like emanating from the back, so I always feel this general warmth over here, and then makes me think about the product that it's there, and that you can feel a little bit of the weight there too, which isn't bad. But I just recall the other day when it was finally 75 degrees, I was like, huh, my body over here feels a little toastier than the other parts of my body.
Right, so above your heart. No potential issues there. Also strikes me, like, Sherlyn, if you're saying it's surprising you, like, when you touch it sometimes, imagine, like, hugging somebody, imagining, like, working, like, having a child grab onto you and just being a little burned, like a little singed by this thing that is right in front of
that
you.
Sucks.
This is not... Like, I don't know, how would you carry a child while this thing is on? Because it's just a little magnet
that's
strapped to your clothes.
It definitely gets in the way with a lot of things. And I will first credit them that, like, the mechanism works well. The magnets are very strong. They clamp on. And for the most part, if you've, like, attached it not in the, like, on top of your heart, you don't really feel it. I did feel what Julian is talking about, where, like, it just, when I'm sitting down especially, like, it leans against my chest and it runs very warm. That's kind of where all the good things end, which is like the magnets work. Cool. They offer you some accessories. Cool. Everything else is kind of cumbersome. Like, if you put it in the middle or on your front, right? Then you wear like a bag with a strap that's a crossbody. Gone. You're like, it's in the way. You put it on a jacket and you take the jacket off, you have to change it into your other shirt. If it's like in the springtime, like it is now in New York, you're just doing that over and over again. And every time, by the way, that you like remove the rear back or the battery from the Humane AI pin, you need to unlock it again unless you disable the setting, which you shouldn't because it's better for security to have it on. So, but the thing is, every time you move it or you just, I don't know. Anyway, every time you have to re-enter the pin. And do you know how you're supposed to do the pin thing? Okay, you guys, I'm going to do like a live demo because for the live stream, but also you can hear on the like audio version of this podcast what that's like. So I'm just going to...
If it makes noise, put it up.
Hang on. I'm going to... So what you hear is what I just removed the battery booster from my AI pin. And it made that little sound. Now it's going to snap. Okay. So, bing, bong, bong, bing. Okay, those are all like cute little noises, right? Okay, now I'm going to try to unlock it.
Sherlyn's waving her hand in front of her face.
That happens so often where the projector just doesn't show up sometimes. Like, and then you're stuck doing this
weird, stupid hand thing
in front of your face for 20 minutes.
So hang on.
Well, it's Sherlyn, you're diagonal, so you've mentioned you don't have all the practice of putting on Star Trek badges from third grade.
You really have to like put it straight and then. Oh, there it is. Okay, see? All right, so now I don't know if y'all can see it, but I'm going to enter my passcode. But basically, for those who are listening to the podcast, I am holding my hand closer to my chest and then pulling it back and then pinching my fingers to accept things.
Yeah, this is great.
And I just unlocked my pin. So that's how long it took.
Yay!
I will say that they are saying that they will launch an update where you can add your pin code through voice. That said...
Smart! Love to tell everybody my pin code.
Yeah, just say it out loud.
But also, like, speaking of adding this pin code, like, if you walk outside and you readjust it and it's broad daylight... You can't see the projector at all. There's just no visibility. So there's not really... You have to go find a shade to be able to do this.
I love this product, guys. I love this product so much because like
one of the most embarrassing.
In your video, Fisher, you were like literally out and about, and then you had to like one hand covers the like projector so it gets some shade, and then one other hand is doing that like password thing.
It's deeply embarrassing when you're with somebody else and you're like, excuse me for 1 second, let me just go unlock my AI pin that I just had to move from a jacket to another.
That's exactly what we all want, is like, embarrassing technology.
I look like I'm a long-sighted person reading a menu from back to front. Like, I just look so silly to me every time I'm using this thing. Sorry.
I don't know. I think you can get, like, what I got comfortable enough with the projector after, like, 2 or 3 days, which is a long learning curve, just half the review period. But I'm pretty comfortable with it now. I think the issue is a lot of these things are things that they said to your earlier point. They're like, we've brought them up and they're like, yeah, we've thought about that. It's going to be coming in 1.2 or 1.5. And it's like, maybe we can come back to this at the end. I'm sure you wanted to talk about it, but like, I don't know why it was launched in this state. It didn't need to. It could have launched in a much more complete state if it had been given 4 more months. And I don't know why.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, by the way, because all the problems you guys are talking about, like the usage issues, the ability for it to like stay on to you properly, the heating stuff, like maybe they could fix some of that. But these seem like design flaws. Like these aren't software update issues. These are physical.
Some of them are, but Devendra, the thing doesn't have an alarm clock. That is not. It doesn't have a timer. Those are not difficult things. Mm-hmm. And forgive me, I know I sound like I don't build things, but those don't seem like difficult things to build. It seems like those are the hallmarks of a thing that's like got pushed out the door before it was planned to be, I think. And so I think there's a lot of this that could be. You could do a verbal pin. Sure, it's lame, but you could do
it.
Like, I don't want to like, you know, they fundamentally though, the projector, and I said this in my review that like, I don't usually make a claim on like, this thing is gonna tank. No one's ever gonna use this. But like, I personally do not think the projector will ever be a viable solution to interacting with a gadget for most people, like most mass consumers. And the fact that they spent so much of their time developing this thing and putting effort in miniaturizing it, and now in their reviewed package and documents, they said, oh, we'll have updates to reduce reliance on the projector. Like the amount of time they spent on it does not seem to make any sense in terms of like the actual end up functionality of this thing.
Can I ask a question on the back of that before we move on? What has been your reaction from regular people, guys? Because when I'm reviewing a product typically, and this is why I'm still rather bullish on foldables, because every time somebody sees a flip phone or a foldable in my hands, they're like, oh, cool. And it's 80%
it's aspirational.
Positive. Like they're enamored. With this thing, I don't think a single person after I explained it was like, oh, yeah, I'd like that. They were all like, yeah, I don't think so. What about you?
I love showing my friends it, and then they're like, wow. And like me, they're all like, wow, wow. And then for me, my arm gets tired and I put it down. Like, I can't show it to you anymore. It is just tiring. So it's like how, and also then it'll cool down and like, it'll be like, sorry, needs to cool down because it's run for too long and it's draining battery and it's getting too hot. So a lot of things are in the way. I really do want to reiterate this projector knob idea is cool. It's ambitious. I like that it's there so that like, and we'll get to these other parts quickly. When you take a photo with the onboard camera, it's nice to be able to like bring up your palm and see whether you did capture the 2 trees on the perimeter of your vision, or, you know, see a message instead of having it read out to you if it's very long or something. But each time you raise up to see text, you can see 7 lines of text and about 2 words on each line. So you're going to hold up your arm for a very long time to see all the words.
Yeah. I mean, it's like living with a terminal, like again, like a command line interface almost.
Yeah.
Like that's what it feels
like. And like going to, you know, Fisher's question, like there's also this apprehension that I feel when I wear it, because my instant reaction is someone's going to negatively come at me and be like, are you recording me? Is that a body camera?
Yeah.
Like,
right,
like,
right.
And someone, did ask that question. My initial response was just like, no, it's just, it's an AI.
It does
thing.
Have a camera.
I'm not recording you right now. You know, I had to be defensive, and it didn't feel good to have to like be on the defensive all the time when someone's trying to just ponder about what this thing is.
This thing, guys, like, I'm just saying, this feels like one of those, like, people who only live in Silicon Valley, right, and only talk to their Valley friends, and, like, it is such a bubble device of, like, oh, this is cool, this would make my life easier, I don't have kids, I don't have any of these other, like, externalities that can mess up this device, but for my weird bubble of people, maybe this could be cool. And we'll get millions of dollars in funding for that. And we have, you know, institutional backing because we used to work at Apple or something. Like, nothing about this device seems like it's actually smart or interesting for actual people. So the pitch here is that this thing would replace your phones. What would it take for this thing to replace your
phones?
So
they walked that pitch after a bit.
Oh, okay.
After they used their own product. They were talking about like, oh, this is the future of personal devices, et cetera. And then in the subsequent interview with, I forget which publication, they walked it back. They said, it's not meant to replace smartphones. And they can't, because you know why? Because if you want to connect to Wi-Fi, and you have a complicated password and your Wi-Fi is password protected, you do not want to use the speaker to dictate your message, right? Not speaker, the microphone, to dictate your password. So you will have to go to humane.center/Wi-Fi, enter the network name, not look for it, enter it because you already know your network name, and enter the password, and then generate a QR code for the AI pin to scan, and then you will be connected to Wi-Fi. Look. You need another device. You just need another device to do anything with this. So it's not
a device that works. You know.
So anyway, I do really want to move the conversation on because there's a lot we want to talk about, and we sort of started to talk about the camera, and you know, with you feeling self-conscious, Julian, about it, like wearing sort of a body cam in public. I really wanted to use this camera to be like, yay, I can take pictures anytime, all the way, very quickly because it's always on me, right? How long on average does it take for y'all to capture a picture with the AI pin, Fisher?
Time-wise? I don't have a problem with time.
Really? For me? Okay, I'm just about to double tap the thing, okay? Oh, sorry, two fingers? What? Two fingers?
Yeah, two fingers. Yeah, see, this is a problem. You got to use it.
Oh, snap.
That's how long it took. Like, wait, okay, well, here's my two
it
tap.
Takes
okay,
three, it takes tap. Three pictures.
It takes like 3 seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it takes like three pictures. I don't honestly know why, because, I mean, you can then look at all three pictures and I guess choose which one's the best.
Because it knows it's not going to get the right shot.
Basically.
It takes a long. Yeah.
Well, and that's, I think that's a bigger complaint that I have than speed is framing for sure. Like when you guys, I'm sure when you're looking through your photo libraries from the thing, there's a lot of diagonal stuff. There's a lot of off-center stuff. Like there's a lot of people not in the frame. If it is, for example, at my birthday and it is after dark, you can't identify anyone in the shots. So you guys, when you sent me those photos from your pins,
I tried to record people singing happy birthday and like people eating and having a nice time. And then I looked at all the photos, like I would never share any of these photos.
Nope, none.
Guys, I mean, listen, it's only the year 2024 and we have not figured out low light technology and cameras yet, right? So there's all the excuses for this company. I'm joking.
I think, yeah, there's a lot going on. The fact that it's a body mounted device that is like on mounted on soft fabric, so it's moving around all the time, definitely adds to the like fact why the pictures are so blurry, and especially bad in low light. But that's like the least of my issues with it. We talked about the projector being bad, which I was most hyped for. The second thing I was most hyped for was having a camera that I wear around all the time. I want to get down to the like actual thing it's supposed to be good at, which is the AI and the interactions, right? There are two features I thought were not so bad, and I will quickly skim over them. And I know, Fisher, it looks like you have something to say too. I want to quickly demo also the translate feature because that is the one thing I thought worked well. So I'm really going to, and I know one of our live stream audience members is asking for it. So translate to Mandarin. There we go. Okay. So remember, you have to press, say your thing, and then let go on the Humane AI pins.
It's not supposed to do
what
that.
What does it translate?
It just said 拍一张照片, which is take a photo, which I That's did not weird. Say. So I don't know what's happening. But anyway, once I say it translate to Mandarin, the AI pin is supposed to wait for me to hold down two fingers on the touchpad and be like and say my thing, and then it would translate it either from Mandarin to English or from English to Mandarin for me. It's smart enough to know what. So I'm going to do it now, okay? 你们喜欢我们的节目吗?
Do you like our show?
I mean, that took longer than I usually like get out of it, but it's smart and it works. It's translation engine, wherever it's derived from. I'm not quite sure if it's Google Translate or whatever. It's fairly accurate. I've tried to trip it up with colloquialisms in Mandarin, and it's, you know, quite okay. I'll do a bit more of a demo of this when we're in our segment break on this live stream, but that was good. The other thing that is good I will point out is vision. So it's a beta feature. You basically can ask the pin to like scan what's in front of you and tell you what's in there. It's hard to imagine why you would use this other than the accessibility scenario, which is if you're low vision, you have visual impairments, you could use this to describe things in front, find things for you. Because it does tell you, like, I was like, oh, are there socks in this room? And it was like, yes, in the bottom right corner, not bottom right corner, but like near the door or like near the shelf. So it was smart enough to do those things. Do you guys agree, Julian and Fisher?
I had a similar experience, which is not critical or terribly useful, but it was a useful window for me into a moment where I was reading a book. The book's title was in another language. And I just hit the pen and I said, translate the title of this book for me. And it, you know, it took 5 seconds, but then it was like, oh, here's what the title of the book is. I didn't have to take my phone out. I didn't really have to do much work. I got it in that moment. Now, again, not a particularly powerful, not going to change my life, but an interesting convenience. And it made me see why the product existed in someone's mind.
Yeah. So there's so much potential with it. Like, even when you're walking down the street, you see a picture or a poster. Oh, who's that person on there? You know, I did this. I was at the Condé Nast office yesterday. We lots of Vogue covers. I walked past one. I was like, who's that? Oh, it's Steve Lacy. Perfect. Walked past another one. Who's that? Oh, it's Lady Gaga. It's not Lady Gaga, by the way. It's just a random model.
Oh, no.
And then I'm at our snack table, and I'm like, tell me what's on the table. And it says there are two unopened bags of Lay's, one original, one barbecue. And both were barbecue, and both of them were not open, by the way. And then, weirdly, it said, and on the right is this a box of Nutri-Grain bars. There was no box of Nutri-Grain bars. I don't know where or why it said that. It just
It's literally
made stuff
trying
up.
To dictate your diet. It's like, don't these chips?
Yeah.
No, no, no. And someone walked past me. Go and find some, like, Nutri-Grain bars.
Someone walked past me and they were like, wow, it confidently lied about that.
Yes. The hallucinations on this thing were pretty bad. And we'll get to that too. I encountered the same things where, like, and this is one of my gripes with this AI in general. When I held out something and said, look at this and tell me what to do with it, right? That's one of the, like, the prompts that they suggest you try. It correctly identified that I was holding out highlighter, like, for the face. But it was, like, uh-huh. describing all the things. It was like, this carry-on true cream is good for the skin. It's great for the... But it never tells me what to do with it. It's like, highlighter is not something you just smear all over your freaking face. Makeup tip, this is for, like, places you want to, like, bring out, make look, you know, higher or taller than other elements of your face. You don't just smear highlighter on your face. You look like a shiny terrestrial, I guess. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it never actually answers your question. And all my AI...
One of the prompts was... Sorry,
questions was like that. Every time I asked the question, never directly answered me. I don't know, Julian, was that true for you?
I mean, it depends. I mean, one of their prompts was also like, look at this coffee machine or espresso machine and tell me how to use it, right? One of the things that they suggested you can try with it. And when I did that, it just said, it tried to explain how the pin works. Like, here, you can use your pin. I was like, that's not what I was asking, you know? So there's all of that where if you can't confidently rely on this thing time and time again to, like, give you an answer and also not make you doubt the answer, you just can't rely on it.
This is like, is the problem with every AI technology, by the way. It's not just these devices, but these devices are the worst of it, because it's like, okay, with Copilot and Windows or whatever, you could go Google something if you don't trust, like, what Copilot is giving you. If this device, if all it is powered by this thing you can't trust, this is, what are we even doing here? You know?
Yeah. And like, one of the strengths of the product was positioned to be, at least in my mind, that it's not just a ChatGPT-4 button. We use Microsoft, we use Wolfram Alpha, we use
their own
models, whatever.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm like, okay, well, cool. That's a custom mix. Maybe it gives me something contextually sensitive for each request. But what happens is you ask it, when is the next boat from South Brooklyn to Wall Street? And it tells you, and it's almost right. But it's 9 minutes wrong. That's more than enough to miss the boat. And then you ask it, by the way, hilarious that this happened, because it screwed up in the initial launch video about that eclipse question. Mm-hmm. Famously, it's like, the best place to view it is in New Mexico. No, it's not. I asked on the eclipse day, I was like, when is the closest New York City will get to totality? It's just 2:38 p.m. It's like more than an hour wrong. And I'm like, How is this still happening? And I think, Devinder, you said what I wanted to say. It's not, that is not a problem with the AI pin. That is a problem with AI. as we use it, and LLMs as we use them. And Julian, I think you said it in your review, unless it's 100% accurate, then any time it screws up, if it screws up once, if it gives you the wrong answer once, you should never trust anything powered
by it. It's funny.
This should be a forever
I've talked
beta
to several
thing.
Companies like leaning into AI. Microsoft has told me, it's like, hey, you know, we're just learning. We're just learning here. This is a learning experience. It's going to make mistakes. And I told them, like, I would fire somebody if they just kept making mistakes at me, you know?
I meant to say, this is something that came up in my review too, which is that, like, a lot of the issues that AI pin threw out at me were issues that Siri and Google Assistant and even Alexa all, like, solved long ago. It would be, like, listening, or like it would A, be very slow to respond compared to like my iPhone, B, like I said, not directly answer my question. The only thing it really got right was that it can handle contextual follow-ups, and I'm like, yes, it is the year of our Lord 2024, of course I don't need to repeat my entire question from the start, right? So I don't know, it feels a little outdated for an $800 or $700 to start, $700 AI
plus monthly
device.
Fees, baby.
Oh, and don't forget.
I love it.
Don't forget, you pay an extra $24 a month for the AI service and the company's cellular service, which rides on T-Mobile and is capped at 4G. $24 a month, okay, for all of that, which without which you cannot use the AI pin. You still have access to your data, but you cannot use the AI pin. And don't forget, if you want to play music after the 90-day free trial with purchase of AI pin for $700, you will need to pay an extra $11 a month to use Tidal, because they only work with Tidal. Okay, I'm done screaming at y'all. But what the hell?
I mean, I love this product. This is an amazing product.
All right. I think the $24 a month thing is like, I get it. I think if the product were better, it would be easier to justify. But I do think there's like, you're getting unlimited calls. It's a cellular plan. You're getting unlimited texts. You're getting unlimited queries to LLMs for whatever that's worth. That's a fair amount of value, I think, to be delivering on the
counterpoint.
Yes,
I can do all of that on my phone.
Yes.
And also, I compared a lot of the AI results with like Gemini on my Android phone, and also with my Nest Hub. Parity with all the answers for the most part. In fact, more often than not, the results were better on the phone, because if there was a question about it, I could actually see the result. Like Google Lens, by the way, really amazing. When I asked the pin to tell me what I'm looking at and it gave me the wrong answer, I tried it with Google Lens and I could actually see the correct answer because I was able to verify it, right? And in general, like, you know, if I'm capable of getting the same results, whether it's with Vision or with AI mic through my phone versus this thing, like, it just is like, the big solving here is that I don't have to pull out my phone from my pocket then.
No, I just think like if you're already, what does GPT access cost? It's like $20 a month, right? So like if you are in the market for this product, you probably already pay that, or it's like the rabbit thing, or it's like you get Perplexity with it, and it's like, well, then that's why you should spend $200 on the R1, because that makes it worth it. To me, I feel like that's justifies it, and the unlimited texting and calling and
data.
It should just
work with your GPT key though. Like if you subscribe to it, you get a key that you could plug into other services, and like it hooks into that API just to use the AI that you're already paying for.
We're also forgetting to mention that the texting functionality, you're using a new cell phone number. So you can't pair this phone number with your personal cell phone number.
We
should do a whole podcast about texting.
We're doing it now.
Do we need to get to it? It's
now.
Horrible.
Okay, so texting.
Do it now. We have to talk about other things.
We'll talk about it really quickly right now. So messaging, like Julian said, you get a different number. You have to tell everyone this is your new number. So the first thing we all texted each other from our pins was, hey, this is Sherlyn. Hey, this is Julian. AI pin. And then for me, I was like, hey, can you send a text message to Julian Chokatu? And it was like, sure. I told Julian Chakatu that this message, hey, how's it going? Just checking in, buddy, or something. And like literally nothing I would ever say to you, Julian. And By the way, can you tell people what my name on your phone showed up as?
Barna Baramsaria.
So it was a number that someone else already owned?
Wow.
I got a 201 number.
Yeah, it was a weird thing.
Yeah, that was already identified by Google.
I tried to send you a text, Sherlyn, which you didn't receive because it said, sending that text to Cheryl. I don't
poor
have
Cheryl.
Cheryl.
Poor
on
Cheryl.
My phone, but, yeah.
So texting from this is so weird because you have to, if you wanted to say exactly what you're saying, which is a very weird thing, you have to say dictate and then follow it with what you want it to say. If you don't say that, it'll just send a thing that it thinks you want to say.
Right.
And if that's the case, it then moderates your content. So when I tried to say you're dumb to someone, it said it won't send that message because it was offensive content. And
let's be nice.
Wild.
Let's be nice.
I'm sorry, that person wouldn't be dumb, but still.
It wouldn't send a dirty joke the first time I asked it, but I badgered it into it with four successive requests, and then it eventually did it. And it was the lamest dirty joke I've ever
heard. How long do you give this company, guys? Like, to me, this feels like when Mr. Marcus Brownlee reviewed the Fisker Ocean, right? And within 2 weeks, like, that company fell apart because he reviewed a thing that was shipping, and they were like, wait for the software updates. Wait, it's going to get better. People are already buying this crazy expensive car. I feel like this is already the worst gadget of the year. And I don't know how this company will survive after this.
I mean, I think the Fisker situation, they clearly had a lot of issues going well before that video dropped. That just didn't help. I feel like this company, Humane, is in a stronger position financially for the most part. So I don't see them disappearing anytime soon. But like, you know, a year from now, if things don't drastically change, then perhaps. But I don't see that. I think they have the backing to keep them going for some time.
Yeah, I would wager two or three iterations of this product. And I wonder if they'll have to fall back on an emergency plan that will be much less ambitious. But like, look, this thing has applications that make some sense for certain people. Let's make a version of it that is a phone accessory. Let's walk back all the visionary replace your phone shit and let's build something that people might actually buy because we're in 2024 and not 2052. If they're able to adapt, and I think they're very smart people. Look, there's a lot of smart stuff here.
Listen, when smart people do dumb things, it's our job to say, like, this is bad. Okay, like, this is.
Well, I know. I think we've been doing that. I just think it's important to.
I don't know.
I was not trying to justify the
mobile cost, sir, Mr. Mobile.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, $30 a month. I'll just throw another $30 about that.
It's important. Look, it's important to remember. That I have 18 different cell plans and I don't pay for any of them. So
you're insane.
I will say I think they have a lot more engineering and investor backing to them than a lot of other companies I've seen try similar things. So I think they'll stick around. And these software releases that they're talking about do sound like they're going to come. And again, to their credit, because there's so few to be found, every time they release a software update in our review window, despite us not knowing anything about them, is that it does improve the experience. The speaker, the music playback service just wasn't working for a bit. And then like after a few days, it did start working miraculously. So like I feel as if we're like one of our viewers said in the chat and the Vinger has said in the past multiple times before, we are beta testing this thing for them, right? The first gen product is not it. Is it something that might work in three generations? I don't know. But speaking of...
They have raised, by the way, $230 million. So that is a chunk of money, but...
Yes.
I think somebody's just going to buy them at some point. Like, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's likely.
We also know that, you know, following this, the Rabbit R1 is going to be coming not too soon, like, pretty soon. And I am very excited to try it. This has dampened a lot of my expectations for it, but... I do know that they already have a lot of capabilities with APIs and, you know, they can actually connect to a lot of third-party services, at least they initially said so. So I'm a little more hopeful for that thing and I don't have to wear it and risk being burned. So that's a plus.
We'll see. I think the world of AI wearables is a little doomed. And I think you'll get a better sense of our individual thoughts and feelings about the AI pin by checking out all of our four reviews, respectively, at Wired, Michael Fisher's YouTube channel, aka the Mr. Mobile, and on Engadget.com. Thank you both for joining us today. I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about on this topic. Julian, where can people find you online?
At Julian Chikatu is everywhere.
Nice. And that's 2Ks.
And Wired. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
And Wired. Nothing to. Yeah.
Wired.com.
Mr. Mobile Michael Fisher?
You can find Mr. Michael Fisher at Mr. Mobile or Captain Two Phones on Threads and okay. You know, the other place.
Well, thank you both again for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Well, this week was really packed. I mean, there were a lot of different things happening. Google also had an event, and I'll cover that in a little bit. But before we get into that, we had a little bit of news from Apple that broke today. And joining us on this very special episode, chock full of surprises, to break down this news is the Washington Post's Chris Velasco. Hello, V. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, it is honestly so good to see you both.
Yeah. It's disclosure, Chris Velasco used to work at Engadget and is now persona non grata. But
And here I am. So clearly there's a disconnect somewhere. Fix it.
Yes. V, can you tell us what happened with Apple this morning?
Yeah. So on what is today? Thursday? On Thursday morning, Apple announced what feels like a pretty significant walk back to one of its most consistently annoying repair restrictions for iPhone. So in the past, if you wanted to get a broken iPhone fixed, you basically had three choices of parts. You could go get your device repaired with genuine Apple parts, which cost the most amount of money. You could go for aftermarket parts made by just third-party suppliers. That tends to be very cheap, but those parts run the gamut. Or you could try and use used Apple parts. So genuine Apple parts that just came out of an iPhone that exists in the world already. The problem is if you use those used parts or those aftermarket parts, you can't pair them in such a way that full functionality returns, right? So if you've got a screen swap, auto brightness will stop working, True Tone will stop working. And for a little bit, you'll get like a message saying, hey, you're using a non-genuine Apple part, even when you're using a genuine Apple part. What Apple is doing as of this fall is with the iPhone 15 and newer, you will be able to use used Apple parts for repairs without running into those issues, which is really nice because if you're a person who frankly can't afford Apple Store prices for an out-of-warranty repair, or if you just live somewhere where you can't easily access a place that has these parts and these authorized repair technicians, sometimes a local repair shop is your best bet. So under these new rules, theoretically, you might be able to pay less for an iPhone repair that makes your phone work just like it used to.
So this is still first-party Apple parts, just secondhand, or?
Yes, exactly. So if someone, there are a lot of places to get parts out there. There are some people, some shops, some outfits who will harvest parts from older iPhones. Maybe they're pulling them from eBay. Maybe they just have like devices people have left behind. So they kind of try to reuse those parts. So there's exactly where the supply comes from is a little scattershot. And Apple has basically told us like, we're not going to sell anyone used parts, which to me, like, makes sense. Like, of course they would want to sell their genuine new parts all the time. But if Apple really wanted to kind of put the kibosh on aftermarket stuff, which they don't, they say that they fully believe that third-party parts should be used in repair as long as the owners know about it. They're still, as you know, moving forward under the system, kind of treated like second-class citizens because Apple can't calibrate those parts to work the way a genuine one would. The crazy part, the crazy twist to all this is Apple says this change is not being made in response to recent right to repair legislation.
Uh-huh.
But just last month, actually, I think like 2 weeks ago, the governor of Oregon signed maybe one of the strictest right to repair laws in the country, which, among other things, includes a requirement that says you, a company that makes a device, cannot restrict the functionality of a phone, even if it uses aftermarket parts. So Apple is partially like moved to make its iPhones easier to repair, but now it has to figure out like, okay, how do we do this? Do we even do this? Like, is there a technical way to make this work that adheres to the law? If you I think the fine, if starting in 2027, if you don't do this as a company, is $1,000 a day. So Apple could basically sell one fewer iPhone a day and it would be totally fine. And it's like crazy because there was a case like 2 years ago in the Netherlands where I think it was like a dating app. There was some sort of like kerfuffle over dating app, whatever. The Netherlands basically fined Apple, I think it was like $5 million a week for 10 weeks until they hit the legal maximum. And I would imagine that Apple just at the end of that, once they hit the legal max, just like paid it and didn't worry about it so much. So $1,000 a day is basically nothing. So it can so easily afford to just like violate that law and like have a great day.
I'm just like, how does Apple get away with like the way it was before too, right? Like, what was the rationale, I guess, for like, if you use a part that's
control.
Not ours.
Control is the best
thing. I understand
right?
Their rationale, but I meant the rationale to make it make sense to audience. Like, what is Apple telling people is the reason that when you use a third-party component to repair, say, your screen or whatever, the auto brightness just stops working? Like, what is the actual reason for that, if anything?
So I spoke to John Ternus. He's the senior vice president of hardware engineering at Apple. And the sort of refrain that he kept returning to was, you know, when Apple is designing its products, it designs these things to last for a really long time. And the sort of the priorities, the North Stars that they design against are things like privacy and security. So in a screen, like maybe that's not the biggest deal in the world.
Right.
Like, you could probably make that work. And clearly that's not like a deal breaker. What I think they have had more of an issue in the past with is what some of these laws and some of these requirements would mean for like Touch ID or Face ID, things that have like a critical impact on securing your personal data on your phone. And yeah. And like going forward, Apple has said, so we're like this fall, you'll be able to use like replacement, I believe it's batteries, screens, and cameras, kind of no problem. And they're working on support in future models of the iPhone to be able to use used Face ID sensors. So like this only helps people who have bought an iPhone last year and going forward. But like they are working to kind of figure out the biometric kind of implications here too. But yeah, if you ask Apple why this was ever a thing, they're basically saying we want our iPhones to work a certain way. A lot of that has to do with security, and also we can't make some things work if we don't know exactly what the part is.
Which is a fair, I think that's a fair excuse.
It's generally quite fair.
Yeah, they've always preferred security, and the thing about Android devices is that they have secure elements, but it is a less constrained platform, right? Like Apple has everything so locked down. I hope this doesn't lead to like potential insecurity, like with some of these parts. But I think for most people, this is a good thing. Cheaper repairs,
cheaper quality repairs. Easier repairs. Yeah, on the whole, I think it's positive. Apple, I think, clearly has a lot more thinking to do about where it wants its repairs to go and sort of what limitations it could feasibly try to work around. But yeah, I think generally, if you break your phone, like you will have a slightly easier time going forward.
I do want to point out earlier this morning, it seems like that. We saw a report, iPhone users in 92 countries received a spyware attack warning from Apple, but the company didn't say how it detected these incidents. I'm not sure if, V, you're up to speed yet on that or
I'm not. So I'm slightly more familiar with, I think, a similar incident in India, which got Apple in some trouble with the Modi government. But yeah, like to my understanding, they don't generally indicate publicly. Yeah, like I'm sure there is a sense to which the governments of the countries in which these attempts were made have a sense of what is going on, but that's not a thing that they're going to tell us for security reasons. This continues to be a thing. Like it's good that this feature exists. It's slightly weird that countries like India have taken that feature as slightly personal in some way. Like it's meant to, I think, undermine the government is on some level their interpretation of that feature. But yeah.
Thanks, V, for helping us break down some of this Apple news. I just really quickly, did you cover any of that Google news that happened this week, too?
What Google news? I've been in humane pin review hell.
Oh. Well, I tell you what, let me tell you quickly about what happened, and then we'll have you leave. How about that?
Catch me up, Sherlyn.
Catch you up. It's like you're a listener. That was a humane joke. Yes, gosh, catch you up is one of the things you can tell the AI pin. Anyway, on the other side of the Apple spectrum, we've got Google, I guess. Was that a nice way to describe them? Anyway, on Tuesday, or at least this week in Las Vegas, Google's actually hosting an event called the Next 24 event. It's mostly for its cloud products, but we did get a bunch of AI-centric news out of it. Specifically, that it is making a tool called Google Vids for businesses. It's basically an AI video generator that will help you make punchier slideshows, basically. If you check out Pranav Dixit's article over on Engadget.com, you'll see images and video on how this feature works. It's basically a way for, I guess, people making presentations to create videos based on prompts or that sort of thing. So it's, I guess, like a version of Sora, but like not creating people or a story. It's just slides. I guess we need it.
Yeah, slides are hard. You
I
know?
Guess we needed a video instead of a slideshow.
All the AI
show?
Stuff is like, can you do this work for me? I am late tired. Just like look at this data and do a thing, please.
It's apparently like you give it a simple prompt to like create what, a recap video or a presentation or whatever, and then you give it a Google Doc full of that information. So for example, like you took meeting minutes and you're like, create a recap video. And then it'll be like, here is a video about your minutes of this very hot board of directors meeting. You can add like photos from a Google Drive file. You can, it will generate things like a script and a voiceover that you can then, I guess, look at and maybe edit, but you can record your own voiceover. You can select from templates like research proposal, new employee intro, team milestone, quarterly business update. I don't know about y'all. I do not like watching videos when I can click through a slideshow or
yes.
scroll through.
Yes. So. And thank you for joining our live stream, everybody. It's great. Great to have you here.
We love, this is a great, great, great video option, all opportunity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but no, you're right. Too much video content. Bad. Bad for the world.
Other than this live stream. This live stream notwithstanding. There's a bunch of different other workspace features, but if you're interested in testing Vids, it will be available in June. It's first coming to Workspace Labs, which is an opt-in feature. There are some other workspace AI-related sort of summary or like prompt-type features that were announced too. But another interesting thing, and maybe, Devendra, you might have like a take on this, I don't know. But Google this week at Next also announced its first ARM-based CPU for data centers called Axion. V, how do you feel about data center CPUs?
I am so ready so to excited. Just talk about this for the rest of my life. Please start Wonderful. And don't stop.
Wonderful. When I took this briefing, I was like, they were like, this is our first ARM-based CPU. I was like, no, you did Tensor.
Okay.
But yeah. then I was wrong. This is just for data centers. I mean, Dev, are you familiar with like the benefits of ARM things
yeah.
for these?
Yeah, yes, yes. ARM, lower power, higher efficiency, yada, yada, yada. Everybody's going to ARM now. That's
right, great. Exactly.
Good job, Google. Yeah. Good job.
So like Google, this is its first ARM-based CPU for data centers, but Amazon has done this already. Like there's other like big AI businesses that are already like using ARM-based CPUs. So nothing quite new necessarily in the industry, but it is for Google. And then I saw another like bunch of demos during my briefing, like this thing called Agents that like creates, it's basically like an open like GPT service that like allows businesses to create their own chatbots basically. So fun. Good job, Google. The only thing I want to point out in it, like out of all this about the Google event is that when I was taking my briefing for this on Friday, I was like just chilling in my gym doing the briefing from my phone. As I always am. V is rolling his eyes. And this happened at, like, the briefing was 10 a.m. Eastern to 11 a.m. Eastern on Friday morning. And as some of you might know, at 10:24 a.m. Eastern last Friday, an earthquake shook New York.
And you're still recovering from it. Like, New Yorkers and I was will not like, stop talking about it.
I will tell you this. I was taking this briefing, again, on my ground floor gym. I felt nothing. I had no idea what was happening. And then this briefing pause and people were like, we're hearing reports of an earthquake in New York area, and we know some of our like listeners are based in that area, so if you need to take time or you need to leave this briefing, I go, and I was like, wait, the earthquake? I was like, wait, what happened? Because I was so wrapped up in watching this AI demo that Google was showing me. It was just so amazing. Cool. But anyway, hey, fun news, there was an earthquake and an eclipse in the week since we had our last episode. V, did you watch the eclipse at all?
I mean, look, I live in San Francisco now. It's fine. But we were very, very far from the path of totality. So I think the most, I whipped out the old Galaxy S S23 Ultra, because I think the telephoto is better than the S24 Ultra, threw on that solar filter and got one pretty nice pick. And then I went back inside and talked it to my pin some more. So I had a great day. It's wonderful.
What a pin.
And called it a day. All right. That was it, really, out of all the news from Google's Next 24 event. I mean, one last bit of like news that the company dropped this week was that it is rolling out its enhanced editing tools that were previously tied to either Pixel phones or like its One subscription are no longer going to require a subscription. So that's kind of nice. You can get things like Magic Editor, Photo and Blur, as long as you're a Photos user, whether or not you're on Android or iOS. So that was nice to see happen in the land of Google this week. I think that about wraps it up for us for other news. Thank you so much for joining us for this brief little segment and catch up, V. We missed you.
Thank you, V.
Yeah, always happy to come by. I missed you both. Shirlene, I guess I'll see you this weekend. Great.
I shall. Yay. Oh my God, I'm tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, shoot.
Tomorrow.
I don't know. I'm having my bachelor party this weekend. Julian's coming. Shirlene's coming. Julian's my best man.
I'm tying up my hair.
Planned it. I don't know.
Oh, I know.
You know?
I do know, yes.
Can you give me and chat a hint?
You'll be very happy and embarrassed.
Tune in for live streams from the AI pin.
The first AI pin. Oh, wait. Okay, party. So can we set a rule? Do we bring pins or no pins?
We'll bring it.
Okay.
It won't do anything, so.
Exactly. It'll just burn you.
It'll just burn you.
I know. Yeah. David ML in chat says, God, he wishes he wasn't missing your bachelor party.
You were invited, bro.
We wish you were going to be there, too. And everyone else on the podcast, live stream or not, sorry you're not coming to the bachelor party. But V, if people want to send you their congratulations, where can they find you?
You know, I think even when I worked at Engadget, I think I just preferred everyone email me if they wanted to talk to me. So I don't have a fun email anymore, but it's chris.velasco@washpost.com.
chris.velasco@washpost.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I tried really hard to get V at WashPost, and they were like, no, you silly boy.
No.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow, bud. That was a lot, and we haven't even covered like a lot of small pieces of news coming out. So let's just focus on the future and looking ahead. Like, Devendra, what are you working on this week?
What am I working on this week? I don't know. What else is happening? So for some reason, Microsoft did not send out the new Surface Pro 10 and Surface Laptop 6 for work, you know, for Enterprise, which is their full name. Mm. So we ordered some. We're going to be taking a look at them. I'm just expecting chip updates, chip speed bumps. But it is always funny when Microsoft is like, we would rather you don't take a full look at this. And that's when I lean in and be like, well, now I have to. Okay, so yeah, I'll be looking at this.
And it's also, you know, important for our like audience, because this is like, maybe it's not a machine they'll buy themselves, but it's a machine they might end up using, right? And we have a choice.
It's good to know. Yeah. And it is an iterative update on a major product line. So that is why I'm looking at it. But also, we're expecting the consumer versions of these devices coming maybe around build. That's probably when they're going to announce it. Maybe powered by ARM chips, because there was a story at The Verge that, hey, Microsoft seems to have a lot of confidence that these ARM chips are pretty good. And between the two of us, Sherlyn, we've reviewed so many Windows ARM devices. I'm like, good. It's not the
so
chip.
Excited.
That's the problem. It's Windows.
Exactly.
But let's see. Let's see how it goes.
We are going to keep an eye on that. And then as for me this week, I mean, I just pushed out a giant baby of a review. It's a big one. It's a 10 pounder.
Gross. Okay. I did that with Vision Pro. I get it. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So in the form of the Humane AI,
a baby from your brain.
Right. Yeah. I do think though, maybe this is sad or happy news for our audience, listener or not, that will probably be my last review you'll see on the website for a little bit. It's a lot of work for me to like manage all these different things I'm doing while also writing a review.
It's so much.
It's a lot. Yeah. So that will be my last byline for a little bit until maybe September or August when Techtober begins again. So just wanted to give people a heads up. But you know, just because my name's not on the site doesn't mean I'm not working on the site. I always worry a little bit about that like I'm so in the behind the scenes.
This is the trouble with moving to editing, is that like, yeah, you just kind of disappear a little. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, but I'm still here. Y'all will still see me. I'm helping out with people on my team around Engadget, get their work up. For example, Sam published this week a Fallout a review of the Fallout TV series, and he loved it. And I love the headline we landed on that piece. It's the Fallout TV series is VATS, a very awesome TV show. Sam's like enthusiasm for this series and
game. Did he explain what the acronym meant?
He did not within the post itself.
It's from the game. It is the mode that you use to target things when you shoot. But that is a really creative headline, and I've seen a couple episodes of this thing, and it's pretty good.
That's
like,
fantastic. Yeah. That is awesome. Sam also this week had a busy one and published his review of the ROG G14, which he believes is the 14-inch gaming laptop to beat. If you're in the market for a gaming laptop, check it out.
Yes.
I also want to shout out Devendra that you gamely stepped up to re-review the Apple Vision Pro after
not
two
really
months.
Re-review, Ish, just sort of like, hey, two months later, what's going on? And yeah, that was fun.
Especially because, like, what was it, like last week they rolled out Spatial Persona, so you spent some time kind of telling us about that, which was very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that with Norm Chan from Tested, and basically it's like I invited him into my basement, and we hung out, and we drew together, and we watched some stuff, and it is a really cool, I invited him in, because I don't get to hang out with people in real life anymore, so, you know, it was cool to have, it felt like somebody was in my house just hanging out with me, and that is a really cool aspect of the Vision Pro that we didn't see until now, so. Looking forward to seeing what Apple does with that.
Yeah. And then for as a refresher to everyone that didn't catch up on last week's episode, we did talk about what the spatial personas are supposed to be in that episode. So go check it out. Basically like floating heads in your living room. Really cool. Really non-nightmare stuff. And then finally, yeah, elsewhere on the site today, Dan Cooper published a very interesting thing about smart rings. Go check it out. And then, yeah, we've got so much stuff coming up this week. Suddenly, out of nowhere, it's like, winter is over. Everyone's emerged from hibernation, and there's just a lot of pieces going up, a lot of news happening. So I guess sometimes we need to take a break, huh? and watch
That'd be
TV.
Nice. A break would be nice. Poor yeah. TV. Yeah.
Devendra, I guess when I'm lying on my couch choosing something on Netflix or wherever, what do you recommend I do or watch?
What I recommend first up is Ripley, the new Netflix show. It is another adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley, based on that original novel, and was a great book starring Matt Damon and Jude Law. Jude Law at his like most beautiful phase in that movie. It's a movie about a con man, basically like conning his way into a rich life. And the show just extends that. It is the same basic story. So if you know the twist from Talented Mr. Ripley, it's kind of all in here. But the show is so well produced. Stars Andrew Scott, I believe, you know, Hot Priest. It is a really fascinating look at a sociopath and what he does to like get ahead in life. But also, you know, I kind of look at this sort of like, you know, we've all read The Great Gatsby. I mean, I feel like there's conversations about what The Great Gatsby is, right? That is a book about somebody from the outside kind of looking at these rich people and being like, that's really fascinating. They're really like intoxicating. I want to be part of them, but also they're a big problem. I'm going to like stay away partially. It's like, I don't want to become one of them. Whereas the story of Ripley is basically like, what if I want to be like them? I also see that they're terrible, but I also want to destroy them and maybe kill them too. And that is a little fun and interesting and maybe more like the eat the rich mantra that's going around right now. So I think Ripley, it is a good looking show. It's incredibly well written, well directed too. Like just a lot of great sequences. It is a slow burn of a show, but I think it is well worth your watch, especially if you liked The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah. I have not actually seen The Talented Mr. Ripley.
You should, you know, I would. That movie is like perfect, is the thing.
And everything
I think
is perfect, Devendra.
Everything is perfect. That movie is fantastic. So you should probably just see that movie. But if you want to go in fresh, the show, the Ripley show is a way to do it. I think Jude Law is a better Dickie Greenleaf than the guy in the show.
Oh, I love Jude Law.
Because Jude Law is just like beautiful in that movie.
He is.
But hey, you can't go wrong either way. I also had a recommendation for you, Sherlyn,
yeah.
A song that I think you'd really appreciate. It's called The Haters Anthem, and I think you'd like it quite a bit. It's by a group called Infinity Song. They are like a New York-based, it's like a family group. It's kind of cute, actually. They make like cute poppy music that does not sound like music you'd expect from today. It's a really catchy song. They have a really fun video shot all around New York that's up on YouTube, too. So, yeah, go check that out. The Haters Anthem. It is a song about not being a hater, basically. It's about the bad things about being a hater. But I also feel like Sherlyn could learn a couple of things.
Excuse
like,
me, you're the hater here.
Well, that's just gadgets.
Oh,
I'm talking about people.
Oh, I do hate people. This is true. Hey, Speaking of movies like Talented Mr. Ripley that I never got around to watching until like way after the game, this past weekend I saw, and I really enjoyed, Molly's Game.
Molly's Game's pretty good.
It was surprising. Like, Jessica Chastain was really great in it. I really enjoyed her. Like, at first, honestly, okay, to your point about me being a hater, I will admit that, like, at the start of this film, I was, like, so annoyed. She was talking so fast. She was like, this is me. This is Matt. I'm so smart. I'm so Matt.
And is then this it your first, like, Aaron Sorkin written thing, I guess?
No, like, well. Yeah,
that's his thing.
Well, I mean, I love Aaron Sorkin's work. So, like, I was, but it is his thing to be, like, a bit like that. But this somehow was a bit more grating. I think it was just this character, at least at the start. But gosh, I sort of got, like, I try not to cry in front of people when I'm watching, like, movies with people. Although I might have cried in front of death before.
Avengers Endgame. Yes.
But so when I was watching Molly's Game, I think there was a scene near the end. I won't spoil it, but, like, it was a scene near the end that's about family and very, like, deep-seated emotions that really brought me to tears. It was very interesting. The movie's not about that, though. The movie is based on a book called Molly's Game about this person who ran gambling or poker nights for wealthy, famous people, including one and only Tobey Maguire, apparently was one of the named people in her books, and some other famous people like that. Definitely go watch it. I think it was a fun ride. I think I saw it on Netflix or anywhere else it's available for streaming. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fun time.
That's cool. Good movie, good rec. That is, I believe, Aaron Sorkin's first movie that he directed. So that I really like that. He directed another movie called The Trial of the Chicago 7, which I think was dreadful. Yeah. So not worth catching up on. All right, thanks for joining us, folks. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find me online at Devendra on Twitter and Blue Sky and wherever, Mastodon, all those places. Where can we find you, Sherlyn?
If you want to follow and see my Humane AI pin pictures, you can check out my Instagram. Oh, okay. I'm at Sherlynstagram, CHERLYNNSTAGRAM, or just anywhere else. Just look for my first and last name, I guess.
# potato phone. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. And once again, we're trying to do a live stream Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern. So join us for that. It's a fun time. Later, folks.
Hell yeah. Mark Dell asked if I can ask the pin to make a poem about bad AI devices. So let's see. Can you compose a poem about $800 AI devices that are bad?
In the realm of wires and whirring gears lies the AI device, not as wise as it appears. With a hefty price tag of $800 more, it spouts misinformation galore. Its silicon brain, ignorant and stale, fumbles and stumbles, a robotic epic fail. Promising mastery, but in truth, quite obtuse, a costly mistake, a technological ruse.
I'm putting that in my review!